I'm Steve Potter, and this is Cityscape. A jazz vocalist Kurt Elling's first album, 1995's Close Your Eyes, earned his first Grammy nomination, and all of his albums since then, that's 10 in all, have Grammy nominations as well. He's been named Male Singer of the Year 8 times by the Jazz Journalists Association, and he's performing through Saturday night at Jazz at the Bistro. Kurt Elling, welcome back to St. Louis, and welcome to Cityscape.
Thanks for having me.
Your latest album, 1619 Broadway, the Brill Building Project, has been out, I guess, since last September. So is that a new direction for you?
New direction. Well, from the inside, everything seems like a logical step, or at least an intuitively coherent step. In the past, I have experimented somewhat with popular tunes from outside of the jazz idiom and that of the Great American Songbook. So there's always a smattering of things from, let's say, the Zombies or the Beatles or who knows where that I've pulled in the past. And this was a way for me to kind of reach out and grab or embrace something that was truly a New York situation, that being the work coming out of the Brill Building, especially the work coming out of the Brill Building in the late 60s and early 70s. So we're talking about songwriting teams like Lieber and Stoller and Carole King and Jerry Goffin. Right. We're talking about Neil Sedaka, songs that people know. Well, You've Lost That Love and Feeling and that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I want to ask you more about that later. But the reason I brought that up to begin with was because I read a review from a critic in Nashville. I think you just performed there just recently. And his words were that jazz purists might not consider this new album jazz, although, I mean, to my ears, it certainly sounds like jazz to me. But do you know what he meant by that?
I know what he might have meant. The kind of, we call them moldy figs, the cats that think that you should only be playing compositions either from the Great American Songbook, so-called, or things that were written by Monk or Bird or Dizzy or, you know, the things that people think of as jazz repertoire. But from my understanding, jazz has always been a syncretic art form. And that means that it encounters and digests and transfigures any music that it encounters from any genre that it finds interesting. And it turns it into jazz music. Mm-hmm. So, as Duke Ellington would say, the material is immaterial. Or, as earlier jazz cats might have said, "Tain't what you do, it's the way how you do it."
Moldy fig, I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, those are the cats that only like Dixieland and such.
Why don't we sample something from 1619 Broadway, the Brill Building Project? This is Come Fly With Me, which was recorded by Frank Sinatra, I guess, among others. Is there anything you want to say about it?
Well, it features a great arrangement from my collaborator, Lawrence Hobgood, and we try to find our version in the 21st century of the essence of the composition and go with that.
Come fly with me. Come fly, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic views, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me. Let's float down to Peru. In old Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come fly with me. Let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, once I get you up there where the air is rarefied, we'll just fly. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near, you might hear all the angels cheering, 'cause we're together, 'cause we're together.
That's Kurt Elling. He opened Wednesday at Jazz at the Bistro with performances tonight and tomorrow night. Well, you certainly made that your own.
That's the idea.
Right. You mentioned Loris Hobgood, who you've worked with, I guess, since the beginning of your recording career.
Yeah, we've been working together for about 18 years now on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your album, 1619 Broadway, the Brill Building Project, refers to an actual building in New York that I think's been around since the 30s, and for mm-hmm. the people that haven't heard of it, it was a place where a lot of artists had offices and worked, and where a lot of great songs that we would know today were written.
Yeah, songs like Spanish Harlem, Save the Last Dance for Me, Yakety Yak. There was a whole series of things that came out of the Brill. It really kind of reached its commercial golden era during the time when Carole King was working there with people like Doc Pomus and Neil Sedaka and Laura Nero. And basically what you had was a situation in which, when the Brill was at its peak of productivity, you could find somebody to co-write a song, you could try to get a publisher, you could demo the thing up in a recording studio, you could try to sell it to the manager of a big star, and you could throw out some payola and try to actually get it played on radio, all in the same building. So there was just the sheer number, when I started to look at just the sheer number of songs coming out of the Brill over the years from, let's say, 1934 through the present, it's an extravagant number. It's just an incredible number. And so I really had to comb through song after song after song after song, because my objective in every case is to find things that I can communicate, that I can connect with emotionally, that I feel that I can contribute something to, rather than just covering a song. Mm-hmm. That's never the way that I want to go about it. It always has to be something that I can put some kind of unique moment to or feel very emotional about.
Do you not like being labeled a jazz artist?
No, I'm a jazz singer. I don't mind a bit. It's what I dreamt of as a younger person. It's what I've worked toward, and it's what I aspire to. I aspire to be the best jazz singer I can be. I think that it's an honorable history. I love jazz people. I love what they've brought to the table, and I love the way that jazz people approach things, and I want to have a family resemblance to the great jazz singers of the past. I don't want to be bound to anything anybody's ever heard before or conceived of before, but I want to learn from the best possible music that's preceded me.
And when you look back at your 10 albums, talk about variety. There certainly has been. I mean, everything, I think you mentioned the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't you covered like Miles Davis, April in Paris? I mean,
yep,
name it.
Yeah, man. We've done Brubeck. We've done Miles Davis. We've written songs in tribute to Miles Davis. We've covered the Basie Band. We've covered, the Ides of March. We've covered the Zombies. We've covered... and then, of course, Lawrence and I have written a number of tunes ourselves in the wake of all that information. So always trying to make a new experience and trying to do it in a way that is accessible to everybody, not just jazz people. Because I think, sometimes jazz gets a rap that it's just an exclusive club, or it only belongs to those people, or it's your grandfather's music or what have you. And the jazz singers have always been ambassadors for the music, whether that's meant Ella Fitzgerald or whether it's meant Carmen McRae or whether it's meant Joe Williams or Frank Sinatra. We've always been the ones to kind of open the circle a little bit more. Uh-huh. And so I try to continue down that road as well.
Well, you were born in the Chicago area, and a lot of your career was spent there.
Mm-hmm.
So this 1619 Broadway album is sort of A Salute to Your New Home? Was that sort of why it came about?
It's sort of a, it's a way for me to respond to the fact that I've been living in New York for a number of years now, and I didn't want to go down the road of let's do Cole Porter or let's do, the Cats, I Love New York and June, How About You? I mean, that's all that material is great, but it's been done a whole bunch of times, and this seemed like a little fresher idea.
Your interest for music, originally, did that come from your dad? He was involved in the Lutheran Church on the music end of it, right?
Yeah, my dad was the church musician out in Rockford, Illinois, and he was a high school band instructor. And yeah, for sure, my first experiences with music took place in sacred settings. And because my dad had a certain orientation toward the music and an ability to lift people up, to move their emotions into an ecstatic place, then I carry that through to what I at least attempt to do in a jazz club these days.
But you didn't study music in college, at least not originally. I think it was history and religion.
Mm-hmm.
So how were you exposed to jazz originally?
It was kind of reverse Chinese water torture. music was always around, and I remember as early as I can recall, we would go on car trips as a family, and my folks used to play. They would always keep the station on what they used to call music of your life stations.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Peggy Lee and Sinatra and some Nat Cole, maybe some Tony Bennett, and it was a lot of World War II era music, which of course was swinging Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey. So I feel like I kind of have a secondhand nostalgia for World War II music. That may have been my first exposure to swinging sounds. And then a little bit later on, Cats Down the Hall, when I was in college, were playing Herbie Hancock and Dave Brubeck and Grover Washington. So I was checking that out. And then, Tony Bennett, I was a big Tony Bennett guy for a while because all the compositions he always chooses are in such great taste.
Mm-hmm.
And because of his spirit. I mean, he's such a sweet, sweet cat. And then I had the occasion to check out Mark Murphy in concert at a place in Minneapolis called, I think, the Artist Quarter, which no longer exists. And that was my first real jazz club moment. And it really knocked me out. And even then, I didn't think, oh, well, here's my vocation. This is what I want to do. I just thought, man, that's spectacular artistry. That's a profound emotional event. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And now back to the books.
And early on, you started doing something that they call vocalese, which is, I guess, is it singing over improvised music? Is that the right way to put it?
Vocalese in jazz is exactly the opposite of vocalese in classical music. In classical music, vocalese is a written part that is sung without lyrics. In jazz, vocalese is a it's still a new art form because it could have only have happened with the advent of recorded sound. Basically, one listens to a recording of a great jazz instrumentalist, say Lester Young or Dexter Gordon, then you do a transcription of the solo, and then you treat the solo as the new melody, and that new melody needs a lyric. So the important part is that the new lyric has to rhyme and find the rhythm of contemporary and modern jazz and has to tell a story, and then you're singing what Dexter Gordon improvised or what Miles Davis improvised.
Mm-hmm. Let's sample some more of your work. This is I'm Satisfied, and I'm not familiar with this.
This was only recorded a couple of times, both times by Lou Rawls, and this is a Brill Building composition. It was used in a film, the name of which I can't remember, but it starred James Coburn as a very thin young man.
Well, here I am in my Sunday best. You may think that I look a mess, but I don't believe in getting overdressed. As long as I'm neat inside, I'm satisfied. Now, I don't want you to get me wrong. I've got no notion to come on strong. My big ambition's just to get along. I figure if I ain't died, I'm satisfied. Hit me, honey.
Kurt Elling opened Wednesday at Jazz at the Bistro. Performances left tonight and tomorrow night. Two sets every night, 7:30 and 9:30. Jazz at the Bistro, that's on Washington Avenue. If you'd like ticket information, it's MetroTix, 534-1111, or go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link to Jazz St. Louis's website. And Kurt Elling, I know you're no stranger to St. Louis, but we're very glad to have you back. And
thank you.
It's so nice to get to meet you in person. Thanks for sharing some time with us today.
Thank you. It's kind of you to have me in.
And time now for a look at the Cityscape calendar. The Ariana String Quartet performs Beethoven's three Opus 59 Razumovsky Quartets in a concert tonight at 8 o'clock in the Two Hill Performing Arts Center's Lee Theater on the UMSL campus. The St. Louis Art Museum presents a panel discussion, If It Wasn't for the Women, Exploring Community Identity Through Art. That's tomorrow morning at 10 at the Regional Arts Commission on Del Mar. Vocalist Mary Keller performs a program titled Music of the Silver Screen. That's tomorrow morning at 11 in the Sheldon Concert Hall. And the Big Muddy Dance Company is featured in Night at the Neo, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Neo on Locust Street downtown. And following the concert, there will be an open dance floor until midnight. And you can find out more about these and other events on the events section of stlpublicradio.org. Next week on Cityscape, in our Soundbites series produced with Sauce Magazine, we're going to talk with restaurant owner Ben Poremba about his personal and culinary history, as well as why he's investing in McGreetown. And join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air when he'll be talking about the results of the Regional Arts Commission's survey of working artists in the St. Louis region. Archived versions of past Cityscape programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr and Drew Beckerth. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter, and thanks for listening.